You must use a star 6 when you want to speak. Okay, Director Rogers, are you back with us? Okay,
I'm here. This is Carol. This is Carol.
Okay,
I'm back on.
Are you okay with approving the agenda, Director Rogers?
Yes, I
Director
am. Thank
Rogers.
You.
Director Rogers votes yes. It passes. Okay, moving on to public comment. Is there any member of the public that would like to make a comment? You have no more than 3 minutes and one person at a time, please. Okay, hearing no public comment, we will move on to the next item. Item number E, Desert Healthcare District.
All
CEO.
Guests have been unmuted.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Is that a
yes,
member
this
of
is
public?
A, yes, it is.
Okay, and would you like to make public comment?
Yes, I would.
Could you please introduce yourself, and if you have 3 minutes.
Yes, I'm Blaine Carrion from Growing Coachella Valley. For the better part of this week, we've been in touch with Supervisor Perez and also Congressman Ruiz and also with the Abbott Labs folks about the ID Now testing. We're very concerned about the agricultural community and the employees who are deemed to be essential, and we want the employees to have rapid testing. There's been some positives at one of the date packing facilities. And I know there's a lot of concern in that group of people. So we have even offered to help pay for the hardware for the agriculture community and donate it to some of the health clinics on the east side of the valley. Now I understand that you people are going to be discussing another rapid testing platform. So my only question for it is, do you guys need any help from the ag community as far as donating to the cause? And I would like to know the name of the platform and what the false positive rate is on it. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there another member of the public that would like to make a comment at this time?
I would. Can you hear me?
Yes. Please introduce yourself.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
My name is Peter Carlstrom. I'm calling from the office of Congressman Ruiz. And I wanted to just make a quick comment. Congressman Ruiz would like to support the Desert Healthcare District and their efforts to test East Coachella Valley residents. And especially our essential workforce, such as farm workers who are continuing to work through the pandemic. As of right now, we are aware that that Riverside County is doing their best, but further efforts are necessary, and the Congressman Ruiz supports those efforts being undertaken by the healthcare district. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there another member of the public that would like to make a comment at this time?
Hello?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Please introduce yourself. You have 3 minutes.
Hi, this is Lorena Martinez with California Rural Legal Assistance. And I just want to point out some of the concerns from the farm worker community that our office has been receiving. Some of the misinformation or misleading our farm workers, as one of the persons just mentioned, you know, that we already have a packing place that it was infected with this. So some of the information that's going out there from some growers are that the workers are basically being protected already because they have a lot of pesticide spray to their crops, so there's no need for them to worry about it. So that's a concern for our office and for everybody here in the valley that information is being going out there to our workers. And the other information that we've been getting is that especially for the day workers when they, right now, currently they're doing the pollinizing, but we know that there are times when workers have to be raised up in a platform. They're all basically crowded together. I believe they're between 6 or 7 workers all together in a very small section, so we need to, you know, to inform or better educate our growers, you know, to protect our workers who are the people who are going to be providing the food to everybody here in the valley and the nation. So we need more protection for them. And I believe we have another person from our office who would like to speak. I don't know, Blas, are you in?
Hello, can you all hear me?
All guests have been muted.
The next member of the public that would like to make a comment.
Leti, I heard a voice that said that all guests have been muted.
Yes, so the public needs to be reminded that they need to dial *6 to unmute their phone.
Yes, any member of the public, if you would like to make a comment, you have to press *6. *6, and that will unmute you.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, you could introduce yourself, and you have 3 minutes.
Hello, my name is Blas Gutierrez. I'm the regional director of advocacy with California Rural Legal Assistance. You just heard from my colleague, Lorena Martinez. We're responding to an invitation that we received from Dr. Barzaga to provide the board with information respecting the impacts of COVID-19 in the communities that we represent. Our experience with the date industry is very, very extensive. We've litigated, investigated many different types of claims of injury, discrimination, unpaid wages, wrongful termination, the gamut. We've also helped many, many people with unemployment and disability claims immediately after leaving the date industry. And we've definitely had to step in to correct and even appeal many different types of denials of benefits in respect to date workers. There's a lot, as my colleague just said, there's a lot of misinformation going on right now about what COVID is and isn't. I can tell you also that one Facebook group that's very, very popular with farm workers posted a video of a doctor from Mexico who went on a really long rant about how COVID-19 is a government hoax. That video last week had approximately 5 million views. The impact is going to be incredibly destructive and at this point still unknown. You know, without clear, correct information, we won't know exactly what the impact is going to be. One of the challenges that our firm has when working with people, I think that there's a misconception that people are afraid. We're not dealing with an expression of a feeling. It's a reality. People who factually know that if they rock the boat, they may be terminated or viewed as unreliable or not rehired the following season. And I actually spoke to one worker from the packing shed today, and she wanted to stay anonymous given that reality. She told me that she had seen people sick, but she didn't want to point fingers because it would make her look bad at her job. That's just one example. We've heard of other sort of incentive programs where workers in packing sheds and warehouses are treated to a pizza party if no one reports any injuries. And that's the day-to-day. Worker safety, in our experience, is typically paid lip service. And I don't think that it's reasonable to expect that an industry that has traditionally attempted to relax or avoid standards is going to now all of a sudden be prepared to provide maximum levels of safety for workers. So that's another one of the impacts, the ability to turn on a dime like that and go from having to avoid regulatory oversight is going to be very, very challenging. Of course, we also see quite a significant impact in housing. This time of the year right now, late March, early April, is considered a shoulder season right before the grape harvest. And more people are just going to be going through the regular routine of seasonal layoffs and submitting claims for unemployment. Kids are going to be at home. People are going to be observing shelter in place and now even actually quarantined at home without the ability to really control where other people in the home are going to be going, what other work sites they're going to be going to, what protections or lack thereof are going to be offered in those circumstances. I think also that maintaining social distancing, another impact of the COVID virus, is going to raise concerns for temporary shelters for farm workers, with the mandate that, you know, that effectively reduces the number of beds
Blast,
or cots that are going to be available.
Can you wrap up your comments, Blast? Can you please wrap up your comments? Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
So we expect that if the harvest continues, that workers will they're going to return to sleeping under buses, under the bushes, in parking lots, be forced to wash the clothes in the canals. That's a big step backwards from where we've come in the past 20, 25 years in terms of the advocacy to improve the conditions for farm workers. You know, all of these impacts, last night the governor announced that the state budget that they just negotiated and finalized a few months ago is no longer in effect. These are extraordinary times. That message that the governor sent is definitely an extraordinary measure, but it does lay the groundwork for the board to closely reconsider any and all of its allocations that have been made. And today's allocation should only be one of several. We're going to ask that you approve the maximum amount of protection. I don't think that $350,000 is enough of a starting point. Really appreciate that you all have taken this plunge.
Excuse me, but you got to wrap it up. Your 3 minutes is way gone here.
Thank you. I'm concluded.
Okay. Is there any other member of the public that would like to make a comment? Okay.
That's not mine.
Mute your phone.
This is Mark Matthews, Director Matthews. I've been on the entire time, but I
thank you.
I was on the public password, so I'll just let
thank
you
very much. I was going to ask about you right now.
Yeah, no,
thank you for sending me that app. Okay, before I move on, I'm going to have one more opportunity for a public comment.
Lenny, this is Les. I just got a text message from Greg Rodriguez saying his star six isn't working for him.
Andrea, did I not give the instruction correct? Is it something else?
No, it's star. Is he hitting star as opposed to pound, Les?
I got a text message from Gary Roto from Borrego, who is also saying the same, that asterisk six is not working for him.
That's strange. I guess I can unmute everyone, but please put your phones on mute so we do not hear background noise.
Thank you, Andrea.
For the record, that was my experience as well.
All guests have been unmuted.
Hey, Letty, it's Greg.
Okay, a member of the public, if you can introduce yourself, you have 3 minutes for a comment.
Letty, it's Greg. Can you hear me?
Yes, proceed, Greg.
Yeah, hi, this is Greg Rodriguez. I'm with Supervisor Perez's office. In regards to the last speaker, I'm not going to blanket defend the entire agriculture industry, but I do want to say that the numerous calls that the supervisor has had, our local growers are taking this seriously. We are in constant communication about best practices and trying to social distance as much as possible. Additionally, we are getting word out to the workers on what the virus is and how they protect themselves. We do, though, however, realize that there is a need for testing in the valley. As Peter said, the county is doing as much as it possibly can with the resources it has. That's not only human capital, but it's also the PPE, the personal protective equipment we have, and have three community sites set up throughout the county right now. But any effort that an organization like the healthcare district can help augment that is more than welcome. We do know that there is a need in the East Valley. There's a need throughout the state, honestly, in rural areas to test. And so we really encourage your support for the measure today. Thank you.
Thank you. Next public comment.
Madam Chair, this is Gary Rado from Borrego. Hopefully, hi there. Now it works. Thanks, Andrea. I just wanted to say that we very much support the proposal that the board is considering, and thank you for holding this special meeting and for the consideration. As you know, we leaned in with the district in having our staff train alongside the county staff, and because of that experience, we were able to open up a drive-in site in Cathedral City. And we stand ready to lean in once again, using the governor's phrase that he used the other day. We're very willing to help expand the testing. We already do some testing at our Oasis clinic, and we're ready to go ahead and work again in partnership with the district and with others to see what we can do on behalf of the community. And so we support the proposal.
Thank you. Next public comment. You could introduce yourself.
Hi, this is Leslie calling with Leadership Council for Justice and Accountability. I wanted to address the board on a few items. The first one on supporting the proposal for today for the testing kits. I know sharing similar to what Blas was mentioning earlier with farm workers and the ECV, I think that's going to be like a real big thing to make sure that residents are supported in that aspect. I know similar to figuring out like more Spanish communication on what's going on. I think there is a lot of still misinformation going on, creating a much larger and bigger campaign and ensuring that folks are getting the right information. I know we've seen a big difference in the past week and a half or so, but still I think making sure that everything is in Spanish and also in Purépecha, I think is going to be a big, it would make a really big difference in the East Valley. Another item that I just want to also address the board on was today we also sent over another letter to the Board of Supervisors of Riverside County calling on an eviction moratorium. From my understanding of what I've heard, Supervisor Manuel Perez address and say that they would want to propose a template for residents to share with their landlords and notify them that they're not able to pay the rent. I think, and also on following pretty much California's executive order and what Governor Newsom has put out, I think sharing what a lot of statewide coalitions and eviction attorneys across the state have pretty much said that that executive order does practically nothing to help renters. It doesn't help anything during the pandemic, after the pandemic. I think it's really important for Riverside County to take a step and a real big, bold measure to really ensure that renters are protected throughout this time. I think it would look very different, too, in mobile home parks throughout the entire Coachella Valley. So I think it would be great if the board could also help address that to Riverside County, and it is impacting not just folks in the East Valley, but all across the Coachella Valley, and we're going to start seeing a lot of more issues and a lot more assistance folks will need, and making sure that they stay in their homes I think is going to be a real big issue. So that's all I want to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. Is there another member of the public that would like to speak at this time?
Hi, this is Gina Rosco Lunido.
Okay. You have 3 minutes.
Okay, so I really wanted to express my appreciation for the Desert Healthcare District for putting this special meeting together. As everybody had mentioned already previously, the support for the Eastern Coachella Valley is going to be specific. And with this initiative that is being proposed, the support of having the availability for testing within already clinics and spaces where people already have built a trusting relationship is really going to help move forward the efforts to help not only educate the community with reliable information, but also provide the spaces and the tools needed for those spaces to provide to continue working with community members. Most community members already know that there's other spaces available within the west side of the valley. However, we all know that in order to be able to work hand in hand with the community members, a relationship, a trusting relationship has to be built. So helping those clinics out like Borrego and Clínica de Salud with the resources to continue helping our community within the Eastern Coachella Valley is definitely going to make an impact. There's a lot of misinformation and information that just needs to be broken down for community members to understand. And some of the things that I have heard from people are like not trusting whether the pandemic is as big as the media claims, or where to get the resources, how long would it be taking to get results, and also how to properly, how to adapt all those protocols that have been shared with the public as to keeping distance when you have families, multiple families living in one mobile home park or in one household. And it's really difficult already to keep the distance or to avoid interacting with each other, and also keeping in mind that most of our farm workers are still working, so they do go out, or just families that have to come to the west side of the valley to get their groceries. They're just by doing that exercise, you're already being exposed. So it's already, again, thank you so much for bringing putting together this meeting and considering providing these resources for our communities, and it will definitely make a huge impact on providing those tools for clinics that already have built that trusting relationship with community members. I think that is funding that's going to go a long way, not only with testing, but continuing informing people of how to adapt.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate your comments. I want to make sure we give enough time for everyone and then to get to the main topic that everybody is here to learn about more. Is there any other member of the public that would like to make a comment at this time?
Yeah, well, I previously made a comment. It's been so long ago. I just want to make sure that the board would remember what one of my questions was.
Point of order, that's not appropriate.
Yeah, this is an opportunity for comments, so thank you very much. We will move on. If there's any other member of the public that would like to make a comment at this time, I invite you to do so at this time. Hearing none, we'll move on to the next item. Number E, the Desert Healthcare District CEO update. I'll turn it over to our CEO for information.
Thank you, Madam President. I will give a brief update of what the district is doing in these unprecedented times. Operationally speaking, we are working on a simplified telework policy for the staff, and we continue to do things that are important for the district and as it operates. One of the things that we accomplished this week was we completed the ACHC certification, which was submitted on March 31st, as it was the deadline that we self-imposed. We are also working on an application for the California Association of Special Districts to obtain the Transparency Certificate of Excellence. Also, I want to share with you that SoCal Southern California Grantmakers invited us to present at an upcoming virtual meeting that they're going to have next Thursday, and I will be presenting on what the district is doing. Also, one of the things that we are doing to help alleviate the challenge of personal protective equipment in Coachella Valley is accepting donations. We launched on April 1st a process for the public to make donations of medical and non-medical equipment and supplies. We were on the news that day, and So far, we have received messages from about 15 donors that want to make donations, and those donations range from CPAP machines to gloves, hand sanitizers, socks, etc. Also, now on, I want to give you an update on the approved items of the March 24th, last week, board meeting. One of the items that was approved was the homelessness allocation of $75,000 for Martha's Village, Coachella Valley, Rescue Mission, and Galilee Center. They all submitted their application, so we will be awarding a grant for $25,000 to each one of those organizations. Additionally, the County of Riverside received a little over $500,000 from the state to address the crisis in the homelessness shelters, of which $150,000 was allocated to Coachella Valley. Also, the monies that were allocated by the county will be to support CVRM, Galilee Center, Martha's Village, and the Palm Springs Cooling Center. Next is going to be on the economic protection plan, which the board approved $100,000 to go to Lift to Rise. Lift to Rise launched the site on both English and Spanish. We have been insisting that it's important that the site is launched in Spanish and also that they're integrating CVHIP to help navigate families to assistance other than cash. The goal is to provide $200 cash and assistance per family. So far, they have received 1,278 applications, which impact approximately 5,000 people. Lift to Rise has already secured over $700,000, and they're trying to secure other funds up to $2 million. The next item is the collaborative emergency fund with the Regional Access Project Foundation in the amount of $200,000, so $100,000 from the district and $100,000 from the RAP Foundation. Potentially 20 organizations would benefit with a grant of up to $10,000. We have been working with the RAP Foundation staff, and we've received so far 16 applications. 11 have been selected, and 5 are still pending the review of both staff. Contracts for those grants are being prepared. Next is going to be the response grants to the federally qualified health centers. We have received some applications. I know that this is a much complex application, so they're working on those. Also, this is also in response to one of the comments that was made earlier on the need for health education and accurate information dissemination. The staff has contracted with CD Strategies and is creating a dedicated page to provide accurate health information and health education in both English and Spanish for our Coachella Valley population. We hope that this is going to be a hub where people can find information, and we're going to integrate that site with all the social media that we have available in our toolbox. And finally, the last point is about Fine Food Bank. They have additional mobile pantry twice a month, beginning yesterday at the Palm Springs Convention Center, and they are having a Telethon fundraiser today from 5 to 11. That's the update on my behalf. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll go down the list of board members to ask if you have any questions of our CEO, Vice President Borja.
None at this moment.
Director Zendo?
Not at this time.
Director Shore?
Not at this time.
Director Perez-Gill?
Not at this time.
Director Rogers?
No, thank you. Good job. Trabaja bueno.
Director Matthews?
No, thank you.
Okay, I just want to say one thing. Congratulations to staff for reaching the HCHC certification. I know that this covered several months, and it was a group effort, so congratulations for that and for all the other work that you're doing for being very responsive to our current situation. Thank you. Moving on to the next item, number F, COVID-19 rapid testing in the Eastern Coachella Valley. I'll turn it over to our CEO to start with introducing the topic.
Thank you, Madam President. The subject is an emergency funding for local nonprofit organizations addressing COVID-19 and to consider approving an allocation of $350,000 to strengthen the district healthcare safety net and expand the testing capacity that we have in our region. The challenge that we have is so large that it's almost unimaginable how we're going to resolve this until there is a viable treatment or a vaccine that can prevent the disease. The only thing we have in our toolbox right now is the physical distancing to prevent the continuous spread of the virus. And one of the critical components of stopping the spread of the virus is identifying who is and who isn't infected, and also who is or who was already infected and that is now immune to the virus, because that person will no longer be a carrier that will be spreading the virus. Testing our population is a critical tool in that, and it is our duty to do something to prevent the spread of this disease and to prevent further deaths in Coachella Valley. We have been in conversation. We received actually a letter from our county supervisor that is attached. There are other letters that are attached to in this board packet that express the urgency and the need for this type of intervention. We have been in conversation with a number of suppliers that have a variety of rapid testing, and so far the most a reputable company that we have found is Henry Schein, who has a test kit that they are distributing or are going to start distributing next week. So we were able to get into their radar screen early, so that if we get the approval from the board today, we will be able to negotiate a contract with them to provide these needed kits. One of the challenges that we found during this process is being the district, being the intermediary, if you will, buying these large kits. I think that the solution is granting another organization, one of the federally qualified health centers, which already has an account with Henry Schein, and they can do the purchase. That is one of the viable solutions. In closing, I just want to say that the recommendation is to allocate $350,000 from the district's remaining grant funding allocation, which is approximately $1.3 million. To purchase, it's going to be around 10,000 kits when you include the sales taxes to it, and authorize the CEO to negotiate and execute the grant contract, either with an organization or a purchase contract with Henry Schein. The test kits would be distributed equitably among the three federally qualified health centers, and test results, protocols, and further actions would be coordinated with the Department of Public Health in Riverside. That is my presentation.
Thank you, Conrado. Okay, I am going to start with public comments
I'll ask for public comments on this topic, and then I will return and go down the list for the board members to ask questions. Okay, is there any member of the public that would like to speak on this item?
Yes, I would like to know if the if he knows what the
Excuse me, can you introduce yourself? And also you have 2 minutes for this item.
Yeah, I don't need 2 minutes. This is Blaine Carrion from Growing Cochilovac. My question is, do you know what the false positive rate is on this test? And what was the amount of money again to implement this testing?
Conrado?
Point of order, this is Director Zenzel. It's not appropriate for public comment people to be asking questions at this point. Maybe we could ask our attorney to comment on that.
Okay, thank you, Les.
We can address under the action item, Les, we can address these questions. Conrado can address that. What we don't do is under public comment get into a dialogue because it's not on the agenda. This item's on the agenda, so we can discuss it.
Okay, I stand corrected. Sorry.
Conrado?
All right. So Henry Schein is one of the largest distributors of medical equipment. The kit that they have available right now is standard Q COVID-19 IgM and IgG rapid test. This is different. I know that there have been emails exchanges. I am part of that email exchange about purchasing Abbott's equipment. Abbott's equipment is a few weeks out. It's not available yet, and we don't know when that will be available. The standard Q COVID-19 doesn't require expensive laboratory equipment. It's something that can be easily deployed in community settings, and the accuracy of this kit goes from 81.9% to 97% over time. It depends on when the person was exposed to the virus, when the infection became active, and when immunity is developed.
Thank you. Another member has a question or a comment. Please introduce yourself, and you have 2 minutes.
This is Gary Rado from Borrego Health. If I can just add or amplify upon what Dr. Borzaga mentioned, and I think that any of us in healthcare in the health center world would love to see additional tests, additional options. I think any of us that are working on this issue would like to. But one of the concerns out there is a test something that a clinic is able to administer, because there's something called a CLIA waiver. And my understanding is that the Abbott test, there's a big question about whether they are seeking that waiver. I think that the proposal, from talking with our providers that have looked into this, the proposal that is before you, the type of test that's before you, is something that can be administered by health centers in conjunction with the district and other partners.
Thank you, Gary. That is a correct statement. It's very simple to apply, and it's a public health type of intervention. You can have the medical model, the medical route, which is what we have been experiencing with the county, of replicating a portion of the virus to make the diagnosis. It is expensive, and right now what we have available, which is through LabCorp, it takes a lot of time. It takes 2 to 5 days to have a positive. And I think one thing that it's important to highlight is that this kit is one tool to help with diagnosis. It's not the only tool that the healthcare provider is going to have. There is a clinical picture that the patient will come with. They will use this test kit to corroborate if there is a suspicion of COVID-19,
And if there is a need for additional tests, they can definitely prescribe additional tests. But this is a public health type of intervention and not the medical model that we are used to in our country.
Thank you, Conrado. Is there another member of the public that would like to speak at this time? And I also want to just remind the board members that if you have any questions, write them down. So when I come back to you, you will have your opportunity to address specific items. Okay, next member of the public, if you could please introduce yourself. Any member of the public that would like to address the board at this time? Okay, again, before I move on, is there any member of the public that would like to speak on this item? Okay. We will then turn it over to the board members, starting with Vice President Borja. Do you have any questions at this time or comments?
I have one question. Conrado, what would be the implications if we only purchased half of the test?
I think the implication will be that we would lose the opportunity to buy the other half. The demand is very high at this time, and also the prices are going up. When I first researched the rapid testing, which was 3 weeks ago, the price of a kit was at $4. Right now, the price of this kit is at $33, and the availability is going to decrease significantly.
That's my question for right now.
Okay. Director Zendel.
I don't have any questions at this time, but they may come up later.
Okay. I will come back to you. Director Shore.
No questions. Thank you.
Director Perez Gill.
I don't have any questions at this time. Thank you.
Director Rogers?
Yes, I had a question. I know that FEMA has received federal funding for medical interventions associated with the pandemic. And will there be an opportunity to apply for this funding in the future? We know that the time lag between applying for a fund and receiving funding with FEMA, knowing how they operated, you know, during the hurricanes and the earthquakes, it takes a long time. But I'm just wondering if that's on the our agenda to apply for FEMA funding to get reimbursement for this.
So, yes, we actually completed a survey with the CSDA, the California Special Districts Association. They are working to tap into federal funding to provide grants and free payment for some of these expenses. We don't know what will be the result of that, but we are working with them, and we provided the information that they have requested, and we will continue to work with CSBA and ACHD to provide this information and to work together with other special districts and other healthcare districts.
Thank you.
Carol, do you have any other questions or comments, Carol, at this time?
No, that was my only question. Thank you.
Thank you. Director Matthews.
Yeah, I have a couple of quick questions. Is there a lack of access to tests currently, to these particular tests, or they're readily available in your? I'm hearing a lot about, you know, my source is television. Are we able to get these tests?
We are able to get this test that is being presented in the staff report. We have a contract that it's waiting to be executed once the board approves this. And the need for additional tests, I will tell you what has been found with LabCorp. They have a backlog of 160,000 tests. So the demand is very high, and I'm sure that when more tests will become available, they will prioritize large systems and large consumers. So I anticipate that places like New York are going to be the first ones to have access to more sophisticated tests. And if we have this opportunity now, my recommendation is that we act now.
Got it. Okay. Walk me through these tests show up at the district or wherever. I think they ought to go to the East Valley to the respective organizations that are going to be actually doing the testing. Walk me through how that's going to work. And so for sake of discussion, I don't recall the real number. Let's 10,000 tests arrive. Really, they don't need to be in next to Desert Hospital. They really need to be in the East Valley somewhere. Where is it through the clinics that you intend to do this? And we're talking about farm workers, so we're also probably talking in the field something going on. Walk through the logistics of how that's going to work.
Yes, it will be a partnership with the three federally qualified health centers we have in Coachella Valley.
Okay.
Our intention is that there will be an equitable distribution. Therefore, it will be necessary that the medical directors of the three federally qualified health centers will get together regularly and talk to one another about what the needs are. And the distribution should be a gradual distribution based on the needs, based on the target population, and based on their ability to deploy this test quickly, following a protocol that the three clinics need to be in agreement with, and along with the Department of Public Health.
Now, this is a real obvious question, but I just want to confirm the answer with you. As you look at the chart you have below here of confirmed cases, and you go through the healthcare district down to about Indio, which is now in the healthcare district, it wasn't. Then you go Coachella, Bermuda Dunes, to Vista Santa Rosa. There's seven cases, which is 5% of the total, and that's because there's no test. Isn't that pretty much the answer to that? Because there isn't any access to testing.
That is pretty much the answer to your question. One of the greatest concerns that we have had is when we have been to the testing sites that is being deployed now in Indio. It started at Indian Wells. Number one, the number of kits that are available, it's a small number. Number two, it takes forever, 3 to 5 days, to get the results. And finally, it's a test that is administered between the hours of 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. when we have populations that, number one, they don't have reliable transportation to get to the site. Some of them, because they're essential workers, and this is where the farm workers community is so important, they start working at 4 in the morning, and they don't have the luxury of leaving work early or just missing one day of work. One day that they miss of work is one day that they don't have income for their families.
Right. Yeah. And then just to confirm the last question that I have is you literally have the contract ready to sign?
That is correct.
Okay. Depending on the approval or whatever, could you get a copy of it out to us at our convenience? I understand on short notice and how fast you move. You probably finished it this morning. But when based on the action here, when you've executed it, it'd be great to see the contract. So that's the end of my question.
Yes, and there are two alternatives to that. One is that we as the district made the purchase, and I believe that our legal counsel will advise against that. The alternative is that we grant dollars to Borrego Health, and because they're already a customer of Henry Schein, they have the same contract ready to be signed and executed. And by the end of next week, they will be receiving the test kits. The other benefit of doing it through Borrego Health Foundation is that they're based in a city where the tax rate is lower. Therefore, there will be more kits available.
Yeah. No, I think the latter is probably the best thing as well there. And I just, the last is just a comment, and when my board members are probably tired of hearing that we, in the expansion of the district, by not including some method of funding in the East Valley, this is one of the problems that comes forward. I in no way want to get in the way of getting testing to this vulnerable population, but we need a long-term solution with the county to sort out how to handle the funding of the expanded district. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Director Matthews. Okay, so I will make some comments. First of all, I appreciate the fact that our CEO has been working so hard to figure out how we can best use our resources to help our community. It's a very big community, very sparsely. The district is just very separated, and I think some of the communities are not as able to access the testing places, or maybe it's just the fact that they are less hesitant and less aware of what's going on, or these hoax theories that are out and about that are not helping anybody. But I think that the more we can do to bring awareness and to really get the numbers what they are, because I do not believe that those numbers are accurate. I agree with Director Matthews that it's just the fact that people are not getting tested and they're spreading the virus unknowingly. And that's going to make this harder on so many more people. So I believe that we do have to act at this point. The number that is being proposed, it's less than what we have available. So I like the fact that we are doing this over a period of time to see, because we don't know what's going to happen 2 weeks from now or 3 weeks from now. So we do have the opportunity to, we have resources still held back to be able to respond to another need in the future. I appreciate the fact that there is an alternative to work with Borrego, and I know that they are a collaborative group and that they will distribute the tests equitably between the three and to treat the areas that are most in need. So I trust them to do that. And I think that's it for me, so I'm going to turn it back to any remaining comments or questions from board members, going from the top of the list that I have, so I don't want to miss anybody. Vice President Borja?
No comments.
Director Zendel?
I have a few comments, and I'm going to start with a little bit of wonky information, so I apologize ahead of time. There really is a lot of misinformation out there, even amongst healthcare people, about the benefits of testing people for COVID-19. And in fact, we've heard a lot about it today from public, and I agree with the comment that there's a lot of misinformation out there in the public, and we have a role in correcting that misinformation. I spoke yesterday with Dr. Shubha Kurkar, who is the medical director for infectious disease, or the chief of infectious disease for Desert Regional and also for Desert AIDS Project, to make sure my understanding was correct. And also, I would encourage any future meetings to involve her or someone with her equal knowledge and experience when we're talking about this complex topic of testing and treatment that may come up in the future. So basically, there are two kinds of tests. There's the PCR, or antigen test, which looks at the people that have the actual virus at the time. They're infected now with the virus, and they're probably contagious. And so the PCR test is the test we've been doing. And then there's the antibody test, which looks at who has been infected and who now probably are immune, but it doesn't tell you whether they're currently infected, all right? In other words, you don't do the antibody test on somebody who comes in saying, I'm not feeling well, I'm worried that I have COVID-19. You don't do the antibody test on them because it's not really going to tell you anything because they haven't produced antibodies yet. If you really wanted to know if they were infectious, you would do the antigen test. And there are problems with the antigen test, but I'll talk about that in a minute. So far, the antigen test, the PCR test, has been useful in hospitals so that they know who does and who does not have the virus, so that they can separate those patients and protect non-infected patients and staff from those patients. If they know who definitely has the virus or who they think has the virus, they can take extra precautions. They do a test which has taken days, and I believe over time it's come down to hours, but that's why they do it. To be honest, the knowledge in the hospital of who is infected doesn't really it plays very little or any role at present in helping those infected get better, mainly because there really isn't a treatment. They know they're infected. There are some possible treatments that may come down the line, but right now they're treating everybody who's presumed infected or has a positive test as if they're infected, and they're doing the supportive measures of fluids and anti-fever stuff and supportive oxygenation and things like that. That may change as more and more hospitals do the tests and they do it faster, and there are possible treatments that come along. The PCR testing that's done in clinics and Virago and Desert AIDS Project, Desert Oasis, and the drive-by clinics have been doing a PCR test, and it tells us who might be infected with the test now, but it's not very widespread because the numbers are very small, and it only tests symptomatic people, and the test takes a long time to come back. So when somebody is seen in one of these clinics or in the drive-by clinic with symptoms, they get the test. They're told to go home to isolate themselves, and maybe in a few days they might get a call that says, yes, you are positive, you need to stay isolated for 14 days, or no, you're not positive, at least when you took the test, and you might be able to, when you feel better, go out, but we don't really know that yet. So that's the PCR test. The antibody test, which I believe is what we're talking about in this proposal, is a lower cost, and someday readily available. In fact, it'll be able to be produced in much quicker quantities than the PCR test, mainly because it doesn't have all the reagents and other things that go along with it. And it gives results pretty quickly, sometimes in 20 minutes on some of them. And it really does offer public health authorities a chance to tell themselves and the public three important things that I think we need to take into consideration. One is it's going to tell us which healthcare workers have been exposed and are likely immune so that they can go back to work with less fear and perhaps less use of personal protective devices than those who have not been exposed. And that's going to make a lot of differences in our hospitals, because right now a lot of nurses who don't know whether they've developed immunity are having to treat people with COVID-19, and they're having to, you know, dress up in almost like spacesuits to do that. Well, if somebody knew they were already immune, you know, they would take some precautions, but they wouldn't have to do so much. So that's the one benefit to knowing whether healthcare workers have immunity. There's also a benefit to know about the immunity of the general community, because over time, as social distancing routine gets eased and people begin to go back to work, the people that will be able to go back first are the ones that we know are immune. And it would be great to know who was immune and who wasn't. And then the third reason to know what the antibodies are, and why I think we're going to see a big push toward antibodies, is that people who have antibodies in their blood because they're immune, they can donate their serum, and that can be concentrated and given to people in as convalescent plasma treatment who are very, very sick, and there are no good treatments. And it may take a while to develop good treatments, but theoretically, if there are people out there with antibodies now, we could come up with a way, probably pretty quickly, because we've done it in other diseases, of giving them the serum, and they could get better quicker. So I do think that the district has a role in this. I do think that we should work with our public health authorities to implement widespread antibody testing. But the questions remain, how can that best be accomplished? And assuming that there are initially a limited number of tests available, which are the people that should be tested first to best help the community at large on those three things I mentioned before? Who should be tested? Where should the test be performed? At least in my mind, and I'm willing to be corrected on this, the testing for antibodies doesn't really belong in the community clinics or physicians' offices where people are going who are ill and to find out whether they've been exposed, because that's not going to tell them with the antibody test. They need to get a PCR test for that. So the antibody test, to my mind, it doesn't need to be performed in that setting. The best way to get information that the public health authorities can use are to first focus it among populations where we need them to go back to work, like healthcare workers and people that, you know, other people that we need to go back to work sooner rather than later, but also to maybe do some studies on representative samples around the Coachella Valley to find out what the true, not what the true current infection rate, but what the over time, the last 3 months, what the infection rate might have been. I'm also a little concerned about the district and our purchasing the kits are competing against areas that might have a greater need for the antibody testing, either in other parts of the country or across the county. So my proposal, my suggestion is, rather than allocate this money right now for antibody testing, is that we ask the staff to work with the public health authorities to come up with a program, a pilot program, to put out antibody testing, and that be brought back to the board for final authorization of funding, and so that we make sure that whatever program is put out there is well designed, that it gets to the people that really need it, that can help get people back to normal life. Because as I said, it's not going to help people that are sick. We've heard at the beginning from the public about people are really worried that they're working and they have to go to work because they're not feeling well, and they're afraid to go to work because they don't know who has the virus, this isn't going to help in that situation. So I think those are all the comments I wanted to make.
Thank you, Director Zendel. Conrado, can you address the points that Dr. Zendel brought up?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. We have been working with the Department of Public Health from the very beginning, and the Department of Public Health has chosen to use the medical model, and what they're using is PCR. PCR is the other technique in which you're replicating a portion of the virus to make a diagnosis. They want to see what the district is doing and if our results are something that they want to replicate, they will be expanding their intervention to follow what we are doing. I think that ultimately the clinical decisions and the application of these test kits should be given to the community clinics, and they are the ones that have requested that we make this available to them. And we have received letters from the different federally qualified health centers saying that this is the solution they want to implement, and this is the, because the applicability and the usage of this kit is very simple for them. And that comment has come to us from the three community clinics. And I agree that we should be working with the Department of Public Health, and what I support through this work, and I have mentioned this before, is that the three community clinics should be working in coordination with the Department of Public Health and also with the hospital. And as I mentioned earlier, this is just one tool to diagnose COVID-19. It's not the only tool, but it's one that it's inexpensive, is easily deployable in our community, and something that are isolated, hard to reach, underserved, underrepresented communities need, and they need it now.
I have a question that goes to this question, Conrado. Aren't these farm workers people?
Okay, let me, first of all, Director Shore, you have the floor.
Thank you. Conrado, it would, if I understood the proposal correctly, the people who would be, upon whom these tests would be performed, are people that are ostensibly healthy, working in fields that have no way to know whether or not they are, in fact, infected carriers or perfectly healthy. And I also came to appreciate that this is a totally underserved community in terms of access to that. Now, did I misunderstand the target audience of where these tests are going to go? Aren't they going to go to these individuals to focus on this cohort?
I believe that you're accurate in that understanding, because the plan is that these kits will be used in underserved communities, primarily with the agricultural industry and the farm workers that don't have the flexibility and are not accessing tests, unfortunately. So that is one. The tests, however, could be used in other populations within the community clinic target population. So that is something that their medical directors, their infectious disease specialists will be working with to make that determination. What are the protocols that they're going to follow? There are different protocols that have been recommended by the World Health Organization, by the CDC, by different agencies are coming up with different protocols and different recommendations. And the reality is that the protocols that are being implemented or designed are not based on science, are based on the availability of resources.
you know, we have had this back and forth of using surgical masks or N95 respirators. And today, the information that you get in the morning is no longer valid by the news segment at night. And it's really a very challenging time for us to say, let's take time and make a decision maybe 2 weeks from now, but then 2 weeks from now we will have to be waiting for another 2 weeks if the kits are available and to see what the price is going to be. I think that there is a sense of urgency in our community, primarily in those that do not have access to anything. We're talking about communities that don't have a primary care doctor. We're talking about communities that are now being exposed because the tests are coming back 5 days, 7 days after the fact, and that need to have an understanding of whether they have been exposed or not, are they infected or not, and to make determinations for how they're going to take care of themselves and their families now.
Thank you. Director Shore, do you have any other questions?
No, thank you very much, Conrado. That addresses my concern. Thank you.
Thank you.
Could I do a follow-up question?
Yes. Yes, I'll go back to you, Director Zendel, and then I'll come back to Director Perez-Gil.
I don't see in the letters from the health clinics, and I don't understand how the community clinics will use the antibody test to take better care of their patients. Can you explain that to me, Conrado? Because I don't get it. The letters from the health clinics talk about testing in the clinic, which is PCR testing, not antibody testing. I don't see a role for antibody testing in the clinic.
Les, I don't have that information in letters. Those have been emails and those have been conversations that we have had with the community clinics. We didn't come up with this is the solution. This is something that has been presented to us at the request of the community clinics. And I will add something more to what we're using with the PCR. There is a 3 weeks waiting period now to get on one of those drive-through testing sites in Coachella Valley.
I understand that, but having the antibody test isn't going to help. And Dr. Kirkar confirmed that at DAP, so I'm trying to understand. It's not that I don't want to fund this. I want to fund this if it's going to help people. I don't understand how the antibody test is going to help individual people at a clinic. I understand how it will help our public health authorities find out who had the infection and is now immune so that they can begin to go back to work in hospitals and in needed places. And it'll give us a better idea of how the virus spread for future endemics. But I just don't see how it will be used in the community clinics or any clinic at this time, and therefore I'm reluctant to okay it.
I understand your points, and I think that if it's okay with our legal counsel, maybe we can ask the questions right now of the community clinics that are on this call.
I'd like that.
Okay, so I'm actually leaving it up to our CEO to make that determination. If he needs an additional information that is vital to the board at this time. So if you want to call on one of our FQHC reps, that's fine, Conrado. Go ahead.
Well, I think they're available right now.
Is it Gary Rado on the phone still?
Yes, I'm here.
Are you able to answer that, or do you not feel comfortable in addressing this?
Yeah, I can address it more generally because I'm not a virologist and I'm not a medical provider. I mean, I can tell you that everything we do, whichever test is available to us, we enact the protocols in accordance with the CDC and with the county. And so we have, of course, the screening tool that is used. I mean, I would have to defer to our to either Dr. Bullock, who is the lead on our task force, or one of our medical directors. But what I can tell you is that what we're doing, even with the testing we have, is to rule out other things which mimic COVID-19. So you can identify, does somebody have influenza A, or does somebody have strep, or do they have COVID-19? And, of course, the testing for strep and for influenza A is a little more available, and those are rapid tests. So the assumption that our medical staff has made is that if they test positive for one of those two, then they don't have the COVID-19. But you want to go that step further and identify it if need be. If they're showing symptoms and you can't figure out what it is, you want to find out so you can tell them is the best that from my non-medical background, from a public health background, rather, is what I would suggest.
Thank and you need you, a PCR to do that, not an antibody test. And they are developing rapid PCR tests, and that will come into use in community clinics, not the antibody test.
Can we ask VIP if they are on the line, Letty? Sorry.
Oh, okay.
Is someone from VIP
himself
on the line?
Yes,
Dr. Paul. I hear David Brinkman.
Yes, if you could please identify yourself and please proceed.
David, if you're speaking, we cannot hear you.
Okay, we'll give it a little bit of time because I think there's definitely interest from all of us to learn.
Did we unmute the public speaking, Andrea?
Andrea?
Yes, we did. Okay. We did that some time ago, yes. I never changed anything.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Dr. Bullock will be calling in just one moment if he can be of assistance. So please bear with us while you're waiting for the other public speakers.
Thank you very much. For Director Perez-Gill, do you have any questions or comments at this time?
I don't have any questions and I don't have any comments at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Director Rogers?
Yes, this is Director Rogers here. I think that we should trust our staff who has boots on the ground, who's talking directly to our community clinics in terms of what they feel the needs are. I appreciate the research that Dr. Zendel has done. I think it's time for our board to take action, and I support the recommendation that's been given to us. I make a motion to put it on the floor for a vote.
Okay. There's a motion on the floor. Is there a second?
I second.
Okay. There's a second. Director Matthews, do you have any questions or comments at this time?
Well, yeah, this is a kind of a critical question on the floor, and my inclination is to table until a meeting next week. I know every minute. I mean, I could be Monday. I can meet any day. I'm not leaving my house. But whether it be Monday or Tuesday, to get this information, because this the point that's being made here is pretty critical, and the experts that we have available that we funded are just unavailable because they didn't know that they needed to be on the mm-hmm. call and get them there. That's my first instinct, but I'm willing to be convinced by others.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so I'm going to check back to see if we have the representative from DAP yet.
Hi, it's Dr. Fultz. Can you guys hear me?
Yes. Please proceed. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, so I'm an infectious disease physician. So, yeah, there were some questions about the testing. So the rapid test would be used as the first test for people who are symptomatic in less than 7 days of symptoms. It's still recommended that they get a swab as follow-up because they're in that window period where the false negative rate is high. So for those people, we would still need to do a swab test. For other people that are asymptomatic, essentially, or had direct COVID exposure, it's not recommended currently to do the swab, so that's where an antibody test would be much more efficient because it would show if they have already been exposed to the virus and have not had symptoms.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So ultimately, this would take the majority of the swab testing we're doing away, so we would be able to do the antibody test. If positive, you know, we would not need to do a swab test, obviously, but only in the rare instance where they're kind of within that week period where the symptoms just started, it would still be recommended, and that's in their own literature, that you would want to do that to do a swab test follow-up. So we would still need to do some swab testing, but much, much lower numbers than what we're currently obviously doing.
Okay.
This is Dr. Zendo. Could I ask a question of Dr. Fold?
Yeah.
Is that all right, Letty?
Yes, I was actually calling on you to please ask.
Oh, okay. So if somebody comes in and says that a week ago or 10 days ago they had symptoms which they think were COVID-19 and or they still have some and it's been going on for more than 7 days, and you did the antibody test and it was positive, how would that change how you treat them? If it's negative, how would it change how you treat them and how does it help their health?
So if they've had symptoms more than 7 days, you can believe a negative test that they truly don't have COVID-19. The sensitivity and specificity in that window is very high for the rapid test. So it's really only people that are symptomatic 7 days or less, and only if their rapid test was negative would we need to do a PCR test to make sure that it's a true negative. If it's positive, it's a slam dunk diagnosis, and if it's more than 7 days of symptoms and it's negative, it's a slam dunk, or, you know, it can be considered a slam dunk diagnosis. So it's really only in that rare window that the rapid test may show up negative in that short week of symptoms, then that we would need to do a PCR follow-up, and that's recommended, like I said, in their literature. Outside of that, if the rapid test was positive or it's been more than 7 days and the rapid test was negative, we would not need to do an additional PCR test.
I have a question on this point. This is Mr. Arthur Shore.
Okay. Director Shore, if I can just ask you to hold on to that question. Director Zendo, are you completed your question? Director Zendo?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Dr. Fultz, so if they come in and the rapid test is positive, how would you treat them? And if it's negative, how would you treat them? And how does it, what does it do to their health?
If we're doing this as an outpatient setting, if a positive test, we would do the same symptomatic treatment that we're currently doing in an outpatient setting. Albuterol inhalers, those kinds of things. There really is no guidance for treatment in the outpatient setting specifically for COVID-19 at this time. There's experimental FDA approval for inpatient use, so it would still be symptomatic, but we would also be able to follow them much more closely. We know COVID-19 is obviously a little bit more aggressive. So knowing that they're positive, we would arrange much more aggressive follow-up. We would be able to follow them in clinic, you know, here in our COVID clinic if necessary, versus if it's negative and it's outside of that window, we would treat this as any other upper respiratory infection, and they wouldn't require as close of monitoring or follow-up. So it's really more of like a resource utilization. We would be able to much more closely monitor and follow up the patients that needed the follow up, where we aren't able to do that right now because it takes, you know, it can take anywhere from 3 to 7 days sometimes to get a result back And that's utilizing a lot of healthcare resources to follow those patients in the interim without having a slam dunk diagnosis.
Let me just ask one more question. Is DAP then planning to get the antibody test?
As far as I know, yes, we would be one of the sites that would be using it if we got it available.
Thank you. Okay, Director Shore, you've been very patient. I will turn it over to you.
Thank you. Doctor, if I understood your response, my takeaway from what you said is, and please confirm or refine my insight, please, that the infusion of these testing kits would accelerate the protocols of diagnosis and allow the clinicians to segregate infected patients from non-infected patients, the patients on the cured cycle from patients who are maximally at risk, and that it makes the entire system go faster, smoother, and more efficiently. That's what I took away from what you said. What did I miss?
I would say for the most part, yes, we would be able to risk stratify our patients in a much more rapid way than we are able to right now because of our current delay with diagnostics.
That's the point. That's the whole point of bringing in these fast turnaround tests.
I agree.
Thank you.
Okay, Director. Okay, I'm going to start at the top for any last questions before I call for the vote, okay? Vice President Borja, any questions or comments?
I do not have time. No.
Okay,
not.
Director Zendo. Okay, thank you. Director Zendo, any questions or comments at this time?
All I would add is that I think that, you know, DAP with their COVID clinic might find some value of having access to this test. How this is going to help people in the East Valley that are going to the community clinics, I'm not exactly sure. I still see the test as more of a surveillance to help us with surveillance, and that needs to be done from a public health point of view rather than a clinical medical point of view. And therefore, I'd like to see a plan of how it's going to be implemented to find out who was infected in the Valley so that they can go back to work, especially healthcare workers and other people, and how we can identify people that have positive sera so that they can be used for convalescent sera treatment.
Thank you. Director Shore.
No questions. Thank you.
Director Perez-Gill.
No questions. Thank you.
Director Rogers?
Yes, the only comment that I would make is that for existing healthcare workers that would benefit from this test is that the providers, the hospitals and the clinics, should provide those for their staff. That's all I have to say.
Very good point. Thank you. Director Matthews?
Well, that was an interesting discussion between the two doctors, and it sounds to me like that there could be a use both in the East Valley and at DAP. And as Director Rogers just said, it'd be nice if we could test our own employees. So the notion of ordering these and buying them seems like a really good decision. Is there any way we could, until they arrive, explore the distribution a little bit further and postpone that, but it clearly sounds like getting them is a good idea. And then where to deploy them might be a slightly different idea. And not by much, but again, you go to where they're most necessarily needed. And I heard one opinion going, we need to test a random group in the East Valley to see how bad it is. And there may be real issues today at DAP, and they apparently don't have this particular solution currently. again, a little bit over my head, but it sounds like we should be ordering what's available now, is what I took away.
Thank you, Director Matthews. Okay, my comment is that I completely agree with the last comments by Director Matthews. I would like to think that the public health agency and the hospitals are also looking, and one of those entities that are lining up to take these tests as well. Seems like there's a very important use for them to protect our healthcare workers. And I think that at this point, this is, as like our CEO mentioned at the beginning, that this is not the perfect solution, but this is one that would definitely be important as one of the tools in our tool chest, that we do not have everything right now, but this is a way that we could help in as much as we can at this time. So I'm going to call for the vote.
Madam President, may I interject for a moment to get some clarification on the implementation of this?
Oh, yes. And also, I forgot to mention, if there is, in addition to that question, Conrado, is how would this be implemented? Could you also address on how would they be distributed?
Well,
would it be
that's
to not leave that up to Borrego?
Well,
and I appreciate them, but I would like it to be that that the healthcare district is the one that's making the decision.
Well, no, I think we can do that. I think as noted, there are a number of complicated issues in administrating these tests, and for a variety of legal reasons, I would strongly recommend that the district provide the funding for these kits, but let the FQHCs enter into the contracts with HCI to purchase the kits. And we can do that. When I raise this issue and concern with Conrado, we can work through whether it's Borrego Health, whether it's DAB, we can have a simple memorandum of understanding as we provide the funding for this to address the equitable distribution through an agreement with them and the other FQHCs in this. But we do not want to have the district have the legal liability of the which these contracts would put us in that situation. And I think it's much better to have these things, have the QHs enter into these agreements and not us.
Okay.
But that's
my
legal concern. So.
Very good. Is the maker of the motion, I believe it was Director Rogers, is that correct?
That is correct. And Director Perezio said about.
With the maker of the motion, would you be open to including that in your motion, in addition the staff recommendation, moving that forward, but also that the agreement be between the FQHCs and the seller, I can't remember the name of the company.
Henry Schein.
Right.
Henry Schein.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be open
right.
to including that in your motion?
This is Carol. My only concern is the time delay that would cause and maybe get a legal opinion as to how that exposes us legally.
I believe. Explain that to us. That there is some reasons why we would need to be not be the ones in the signing the agreement because of the expectation that we're not healthcare providers, and I think that would be a problem. It would expose us to some legal issues that if the FQHCs are willing to step forward and enter into the agreements directly with Henry Schein, then that would address it. It's my understanding. Our attorney,
yes.
Jeff,
and those agreements can be entered into immediately. There's no delay, Carol.
And our CEO, are you okay with that?
Excuse me?
Can you repeat that, Lady?
our CEO, can you just chime in and whether this would be okay to allow us to move the way your recommendation to move forward with
so if we move
additional bureaucracy or barriers?
So if we grant the dollars to Borrego Health, they can move right away. I have been in conversation with them about that option and also with Henry Schein about that option. So we can move very fast if
okay,
that is the decision that is made today.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay,
Carol,
good.
Director Rogers, are you okay with that?
Sure, I'm okay with that. Thank you.
Okay, and Vice President Borja, are you okay with the amendment?
Yes, I didn't make the second motion. It was Yvette, I think. But
okay. So, Andrea, you have the maker of the motion and the second.
I'm sorry, what was the updated motion? What are we including into
this? The staff recommendation, moving forward with the staff recommendation, but to include that the agreements will be entered into between Borrego Health and
I'm sorry, there was an echo. Borrego Health and
the company, Henry Schein? Schein.
Henry Schein.
Henry Schein.
Schein.
Yes.
Got it.
Can I just make a recommendation? First of all, it replaces the second bullet, which says the CEO will execute the purchase agreement, that comes out. And then do you just want to say with FQHCs rather than specifically say which FQHC, so that gives Conrado more flexibility?
I like that. Is that okay, the maker of the motion, Director Rogers?
I'm good with that. Thank you.
Okay, and the second, I'm not sure if it's Vice President Borja or Director Perezio. That's what I was asking Andrea.
Director Perezio. Director Perezio has a second.
Okay. Director Perezio, are you okay with the change as recommended by Director Zendel?
Yes.
Okay. And I'm going to call for the vote. Vice President Borja.
Yes.
Director Zendel.
Abstain.
Director Shore.
Yes.
Okay, I forgot to say what I'm supposed to say. Vice President Borja votes yes. Director Zendel abstains. Director Shore says yes. Director Perez-Gill.
Yes.
Director Perez-Gill says yes. Director Rogers.
Yes.
Director Rogers says yes. Director Matthews?
Yes.
Director Matthews says yes, and I vote yes. The motion passes 6-1 with one abstention. Okay, next item on the agenda is?
Will this be an MOU question mark? If so, comma, did they approve that at this meeting? Period.
Is there staff comment in the background there?
Chris, was that you?
Yes.
I am so sorry. Forgive me.
Okay. Moving on to next item, G, immediate issues and comments. CEO?
No, nothing at this time.
Okay. Vice President Borja?
Yes. Last time we met, we had voted together to give $50,000 in education towards coronavirus. After hearing the public comments today and after a week of just hearing what's going on in our communities, I think it would be appropriate for us to ask the staff to do, in my humble opinion, two things. One, create information about COVID-19 in the Purépecha language, which does not seem to be available out there at the moment. And secondly, to ask the staff to figure out what does quarantine look like for families that live in either trailer homes or apartment complexes?
CEO, are you okay with that?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Anything else, Vice President Borja?
That's it. Thank you, everyone, for participating.
Director Zendel?
Well, I would want to second what Karen said, because I think that there is a lot of misinformation out there, and that is a unique role that the district can play, especially if it makes it known to public health authorities that there is that misinformation out there and they have an obligation to come forward. That brings me to my next point, though, and that's that I really think that we ought to ask the county director of public health to come to one of our meetings so that we can understand why the healthcare district is doing his job and the county's job in many of these situations. I understand that they're limited in money, and I understand that we have a role in helping them do things. But when we are asked to help them, it would be nice for us as directors to hear directly how we can be of help and understand why we're being asked to help. It would make me feel a lot more comfortable.
Okay. CEO? CEO?
I'm sorry, I was on mute. I agree with some of the statements. I think it's a difficult position for us to be challenging what the Department of Public Health is doing, because we have no oversight over their work. And I believe that they are responding to a need that, with no guidance from the federal government whatsoever, there have been so many missteps in addressing this pandemic, beginning with the federal government assigning the CDC to be the only one who will make a test available for the public, and the test that the CDC created was a failure. That's why we are here 3 months later, 4 months later, trying to address the need for testing. And the Department of Public Health, in my views, is using what the toolbox that they have, and we will continue to work with them. I think that it is important that we coordinate our efforts with them, that we find the ground in which we have a common interest, which is indeed providing solutions for our population, and if possible, yes, nudge them to adopt better strategies to make testing available to all the community, to have a much more rapid way of addressing this pandemic.
I just want to say that I welcome the opportunity to have a stronger relationship with the County Public Health. I see us as partners, so I would like to extend that invitation that when Dr. Kaiser is able to join us at some point, if not right away, then but sometime in the future when his schedule allows. Okay, so moving on to Director Shore.
No further comments. Thank you.
Director Perez-Gill?
I don't have any comments at this time. I do have a comment. I want to thank the staff for their hard work. I know it's kind of hard right now with the times that we're living. I'm glad that they're out there in the front lines helping us figure out what we need to do to help. And thank you all very much for your help.
Thank you. Director Matthews.
I just want to comment that it's pretty good to be a Californian. I think the governor and the agencies, the counties, and even, you know, get down to the district working are really pulling together and everybody's staying at home and doing their job, and it makes me proud to be a Californian.
Very good. Thank you very much. I thank everybody, staff, the public for joining us, and the directors for working with me to make this meeting as efficient as we could. Thank you very much, and we'll be in touch. Take care. Be safe.
Good night.
I adjourn the meeting.
Thank you. Good night. Bye.